This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Hihi Suhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Strong tremors continued yesterday, one of them of magnitude 4.9 on the Richter scale. Such tremors could cause more lava to escape from the many cracks in the mountain.
That's the spokesman for the UN Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs on continuing earthquakes causing people to flee from Goma, DRC. Details coming up. Also, U.S. lawmakers are now supporting tougher measures against Ethiopia to end atrocities in the Tigray region. And Saudi Arabia is requesting pilgrims to the annual Hajj to be vaccinated for COVID-19. These stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The Norwegian Refugee Council's annual index of the 10 most neglected displacement crises in the world explores why some conflict-affected countries are failing to get the support they need. The Democratic Republic of Congo tops this year's list. Maureen McGee, the Council's Regional Director for Central and West Africa, spoke with reporter Ruben Chama and gave more details about the report.
This year, 8 of the 10 countries on the list are within Africa. Topping the list is the Democratic Republic of Congo, which currently has more than 20 million people in need of humanitarian assistance and protection. There's also 27 million people facing food insecurity. And despite the rise in displacement, we aren't hearing about it on the media, except for when a volcano erupts, which we unfortunately are dealing with now, which is yet another crisis facing that country. Despite the increase in violence and people fleeing their homes, we haven't seen any new initiatives on the international diplomatic level. And in terms of funding, this year, the international community to address humanitarian concerns has requested $2 billion, and to date, only 12% is funded. The other countries on the list, many of them are in Central and West Africa. So this includes Cameroon, Burundi, Nigeria, Burkina Faso, Ethiopia, the Central African Republic, and Mali.
How has the COVID-19 pandemic worsened the situation?
Obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected the entire world. And countries, generous donor countries who normally provide a lot of financing to support countries that are affected by conflict, obviously have internal domestic concerns. Their economies have taken a turn for the worse. There is a need to finance the public health response in those countries. And so the amount of funding available to go to other countries in need, we are seeing a reduction. But I think the second thing that affects people every single day is some of the public health measures. You know, we refer to the secondary consequences of borders being closed, markets being closed, schools being closed. This has really affected people's ability to have their livelihoods continue. So another downturn economically at a national level in many of these countries, but at a household level where, you know, people aren't able to access their farms, they aren't able to sell at the market. There has been really negative consequences in terms of the economic capacity of individuals linked to the pandemic.
What needs to be done, especially now that COVID-19 continues to make the situation worse?
The COVAX initiative, which is to ensure that all countries have access to the vaccine, is critical. The pandemic does not know any borders, and if people don't have access to the vaccine across the world, we will continue to live with the consequences. I think we also have to be very frank, however, if countries on this list, you know, it is conflict. And so there is a need to address, you know, the root causes of these conflicts, a need to finance a humanitarian response so people can live in safety, have access to food and water, and ensure their children can go to school. So while there is a need to focus on the pandemic, we have to continue also to ensure other types of humanitarian responses.
How much of the donor fatigue is in play as the rich countries focus more inward than usual?
I think we need to remain optimistic and hope that countries will be able to continue to support. Unfortunately, donor fatigue isn't just linked to the crisis. If we look at the Democratic Republic of Congo, for instance, you know, last year its funding was only met at something like 38-39%. All of these countries that I'm mentioning never receive funding more than 50% of what the actual needs are. So donor fatigue, but also there are real questions about where donors do provide their money. There are geopolitical concerns at play. And so how we ensure that donor financing is based on needs of people, not in the country in which they find themselves, is really a message we have to continue to push for.
That was Maureen Magee, Regional Director for Central and West Africa at the Norwegian Refugee Council, speaking with reporter Ruben Chama from Dakar. UN aid agencies say residents of Goma in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo are fleeing the city in fear of further volcanic eruptions from Mount Nyiragongo. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Barely 1 week has passed since thousands of people in eastern Congo fled to neighboring Rwanda to escape lava flowing down on their towns. Most, who return soon after, are on the move again, following orders by local authorities to evacuate the area. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reports more than 30 people were killed, dozens reported missing, and 20,000 rendered homeless in the first volcanic eruption on May 22nd. ARCHA's spokesman Jens Laerke says the number of people who already have left Goma is not known, but some 400,000 potentially are affected by an evacuation order issued by local authorities. He says many people are fleeing east into neighboring Rwanda, while others are going north toward the town of Rutshuru or south toward Bukavu.
Large traffic jams were observed yesterday on the main exit roads from Goma. People are moving in all directions, mostly on foot, carrying what they can, but also in cars and on boats. Strong tremors continued yesterday, one of them of magnitude 4.9 on the Richter scale. Such tremors could cause more lava to escape from the many cracks in the mountain.
The UN Refugee Agency reports an estimated 4,000 people from DRC had arrived in Rwanda as of late Thursday. UNHCR spokesman Baba Baluch says more displaced people are arriving as Goma is being evacuated.
UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, is working closely with the Rwandan authorities at the national and local level to assist them and provide emergency assistance. We are grateful to Rwanda for opening its borders to the people in need of safety.
ARCHA reports it plans to expand its humanitarian aid beyond people directly affected by the volcanic eruption in Goma. It says people who have fled to Rutshuru, Bukavu, and other relocation areas also will be assisted. The World Food Program reports it has been providing food aid in Rwanda since May 25th to people who have fled the first volcanic eruption and will extend this assistance to the new arrivals as well. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United States is warning Ethiopia and Eritrea that they may face further U.S. actions, including Magnitsky Act sanctions, if those stoking violence against civilians in the Tigray region do not reverse course. As VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Shane reports, leading U.S. lawmakers also support tougher measures to end the atrocities.
More than 6 months of conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region between the Ethiopian and Eritrean militaries and the Tigray People's Liberation Front have left thousands dead, some 2 million people forced from their homes, and some 5 million facing famine. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Bob Menendez held a hearing on the Tigray crisis Thursday and said he sees echoes of the genocide in Darfur. Democratic Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Bob Menendez.
All sides are guilty of abuses, but the fragmentary reporting we have indicates that Ethiopian, Eritrean, and allied militia have disproportionately been responsible for targeting civilians in a manner that is both reckless and sinister. We appear to be witnessing war crimes and crimes against humanity.
As the violence and the humanitarian crisis worsen, Menendez and other senators called on the State Department to finish reviewing whether the atrocities in Tigray amount to war crimes as soon as possible. Ranking member Senator Jim Risch agreed that the world has seen this script before in places like Darfur and Rwanda. Ranking member Senator Jim Risch, a Republican.
The United States and its allies must continue to transition and do so quickly from a position of hands-off diplomacy, like encouragement, engagement, and talking to the Ethiopian and Eritrean governments, to hands-on action.
Reports of gang rape of Tigrayan women and girls are widespread. Here, rape survivors shelter in a safe house in Mekelle and learn new skills. Sarah Charles of the U.S. Agency for International Development told senators the brutality is some of the worst she has ever seen. Sarah Charles is with the U.S. Agency for International Development.
The reports not only speak to widespread incidents of rape and other gender-based violence, but of systematic attempts to dismantle society and destroy families. Some perpetrators are targeting the wives of priests, abusing women in front of their families, or using a level of violence so brutal that women are left with organ damage.
Robert Godek, the U.S. Acting Assistant Secretary for the Bureau of African Affairs, said that after such a hopeful beginning under Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, Ethiopia is now at a turning point, and unless it reverses course, could face further measures such as Magnitsky Act sanctions that can include asset freezes and barring human rights violators from entering the U.S. Robert Godek is the U.S. Acting Assistant Secretary for the Bureau of African Affairs at the State Department.
Ethiopia is at a turning point. The government's response of mass arrests, media restrictions, human rights violations, and declining political space is fueling intercommunal rivalry and imperiling the national elections now scheduled for June 21.
Contradicting multiple human rights and relief organizations, Ethiopian government officials say the vast majority of those killed in Tigray are fighters, not civilians. Ethiopia's foreign ministry has accused the United States of meddling in its internal affairs and threatens to reassess relations with Washington if security sanctions continue. Cindy Sane, VOA News.
Germany apologized today for its role in the slaughter of Herero and Nama tribespeople in Namibia more than a century ago and officially described the massacre as genocide for the first time. It agreed to fund projects worth over €1 billion over 30 years to atone for its role in genocide and property seizures in its then colony, according to Namibian media reports. German soldiers killed some 65,000 Herero and 10,000 Nama members in a 1904-1908 campaign after a revolt against land seizures by colonists. Historians and the United Nations have long called it the first genocide of the 20th century. While Germany has previously acknowledged more responsibility for the killings, it has avoided making an official apology for the massacres to avoid compensation claims. Saudi Arabia is requiring all pilgrims for the scaled-back annual Hajj in July to be vaccinated against COVID-19. In Tanzania, where vaccinations have not yet begun, Muslims hoping to go to Mecca are urging authorities to start jabbing. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Omar Abu Bakari, like many other Muslims in Tanzania, wants to make the pilgrimage to the holy seat of Mecca. It's an integral part of the Muslim faith. But for now, only those immunized against COVID-19 can take part in this year's Hajj. Abu Bakari is worried because vaccinations in Tanzania have yet to be approved.
Kwa muda uliobaki kwa kweli ni mchache sana. The time remaining is limited, but still, we haven't given up. We expect our top leaders to check on the issue of vaccination carefully so we can accomplish this holy worship. We failed to go last year because of COVID-19, and if it continues till next year, it means our worship has ended. This is the main pillar of our religion. Until earlier this year, Tanzanian authorities had rejected COVID-19 vaccines. Then President John Magufuli instead promoted false remedies for the disease. Soon after Magufuli's death in March, his successor, Samia Hassan, formed a COVID-19 task force to advise her government on handling the infections. In their report 2 weeks ago, the committee declared the vaccines to be effective and recommended that travelers going abroad be among those to get their shots first. Said Abud is the committee chairperson. The committee advises the government using its institutions and continues to move to allow free vaccines using vaccine brands listed by the World Health Organization because the shots are effective and safe since they are scientifically approved. Last week, President Hassan said the government is checking to see if COVID-19 vaccines that are available in other countries can be ordered for Tanzanians. But with no vaccination campaign in sight, Muslim leaders see the chances of Tanzanians attending this year's pilgrimage to be low at best. Haidari Kambwili is the Hajj Travelers Coordinator with the National Muslim Council of Tanzania. I cannot say that we can't accomplish Hajj worship, but the percentages seem to be very low to accomplish the worship this year. The remaining percentages, only Allah will decide. Because even if we get vaccinated, as our leaders are struggling to accomplish, still, time is a challenge. Meanwhile, COVID-19 has not stopped Tanzanians like Abu Bakari from continuing to worship in mosques. But for now, his plan to join his fellow Muslims in Mecca for Hajj prayers remains up in the air. Charles Kombe for VOA News in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
Authorities in Cameroon are clearing the streets in the capital Yaounde for more than 300 psychiatric patients whom officials say have been abandoned by family members. The Central African State says stress from Boko Haram terrorism, a separatist crisis in its English-speaking western regions, and the increase in consumption of hard drugs are responsible for growing numbers of psych patients. Mokedwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Nous souhaitons que les familles puissent notifier leur cas.
Law Mengeme is the director of mental health at Cameroon's Ministry of Health. She speaks to a group of about 70 people at the central market in Yaounde on why psychiatric patients should not be left on the streets.
On estime que il faut les enlever de la voie publique.
Mengeme says she is making it clear that mentally ill patients should not be removed from the streets as refuse. She says local councils in Cameroon have social affairs services that will assist in the treatment of all abandoned mental health patients in the company of family members. Among those listening to Mengeme is 49-year-old secondary school teacher Theresia Mbite. Mbite says her 19-year-old son became violent in the English-speaking northwestern town of Bamenda in 2017. She says his son began taking illegal drugs when separatist fighters prohibited children from going to school.
I have done a lot. Many people can testify. He escaped from here, trekked to Nigeria. The person picked him in Nigeria, called me one day after 6 weeks of his stay there, and then told me I had to borrow money to go collect him from Nigeria. When I brought him back here, I thought things were going to become better, but nothing changed.
Mbite said she traveled from Bamenda to Yaounde when Cameroon State Radio reported that the government was helping families take their loved ones off the streets. The health ministry reported that the number of abandoned psychiatric patients increased from 50 to more than 300 in Yaoundé within 2 years. At least 2,700 patients are on the streets all over Cameroon, with more than 400 in the commercial capital city Douala. Cameroon counted 1,300 such patients in its territory in 2019. Franklin Gwen is supervisor of the mental health department of the Cameroon Baptist Convention Health Services. He says abuse and trauma from the various crises Cameroon faces has led to an increase in the number of psychiatric patients.
There are several reasons why people who are developing mental illnesses are increasing. Some of them are very imminent, including the socio-political crisis in the Northwest region, the Southwest region, and the Boko Haram crisis in the North. This has given an opportunity for a lot of abuses, violence, and trauma. And these traumas can result to the development of mental illnesses. We also have schools where teenagers are using a lot of drugs. All these drugs are contributing to development of mental illnesses.
Traditionally, many Cameroonians believe that mental health crises are divine punishments for wrongdoing. Some say witchcraft or spiritual possession are responsible for mental illness. Fonbe Hedwick runs Living Vine Mental Health Center in the English-speaking northwestern town of Bamenda. He is part of the campaign to remove mental patients from the streets. Fonbe says some patients are escaping from the homes of African traditional healers and Pentecostal pastors who abuse them, claiming that they are chasing evil spirits.
They should not be beaten. Patients with psychiatric conditions should not be tied up. Some kind of brutal force should not be meted on them. We encourage families to avoid taking them to places where they think that they will just pray for this patient and they get miracle healing, or to traditional medicine people who will think that they will do some concoction and this patient will get well. And this is our message to all the families and all the communities.
Fonbe said with the arrival of the coronavirus in Cameroon in March 2020, many families have lacked the resources to care for psychiatric patients at home, putting them on the streets. The health ministry is asking family members to take relatives with mental health problems to hospitals for treatment. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat and dumbolo, and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here. Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the internet.